This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
What separates people is the mindset they have when they fail. And as professionals, as business people, as human beings in relationships, we think that we're either doing great or we're doing horrible. And I call it, we've got to be both a work of art and a work in progress.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another fabulous episode of the Color of Money podcast. You are tuned in for something special today. I've got my two favorite big brothers with me. I've got Bowman Keaty. I've got Emmerich Peace. Y'all know him as Unc. And we don't have a guest today because guess what? They are the guests today. And we're going to talk about something that I think is incredibly important. And when we decided what to talk about, oddly enough, we are all in alignment. And friends, what you are in store for today with Emmerich Peace, Bowman Keaty, and myself, Julia Lachey, is a conversation about what we think are the keys to entrepreneurial success. Recently, I've been going around doing a keynote called Keep Building, and it includes five keys to success. And they are, I'll tell you what they are. The first one, of course, is understanding your purpose and your passion. The second one is about creating a mission and a vision, I should say a clear vision and a mission. The third one is really about just having a mindset of resilience, adopting a resilient mindset, because you need that in entrepreneurship. The fourth one is about actually embracing failure, because failure is an inevitable part of entrepreneurship. We like to pride ourselves on failing forward. And then the last one that we'll talk about probably at the greatest length is making sure that you surround yourself with the right people. Now, the interesting thing is when I shared that this is what I wanted to talk about, Emmerich says, I've been going all around the country talking about that. And Bo says, you know what? I've got three keys to success and they fall right in line with that. So today, friends, you are in store for something special. We're going to help you on your entrepreneurial journey with these keys to success. So first, I think for maybe somebody who might be their first time tuning into this podcast, who are you, Emmerich, and who are you, Bo, and what is entrepreneurship look like in your world?
Okay. I'm Emmerich Peace. I am the operating principal of Keller Williams Preferred Properties, a 600-person office, real estate office. We consistently rank number one in our marketplace. We're one of the largest single office real estate companies in the country. I'm retired from the United States Air Force, and I live off of relationships. I live off of relationships. That's my thing. Relationships will take you places money can't. So, you know, in that space of being an entrepreneur, I clearly understand that you absolutely have to have partnerships.
Thank you. Bo?
My life has been a wild and wonderful journey of being part of being an entrepreneur around real estate and around social impact issues. So I've had the opportunity my life to help grow a national nonprofit in the college access space, to build a real estate brokerage company that grew to over 1,000 associates, to be part of supporting some regional operations of Keller Williams that supported about 20,000 real estate agents. Had an opportunity to start a number of other businesses related to that in mortgage and title and insurance. And then also had the opportunity to build a real estate investment development company that's built over 5 million square feet of mixed-use properties up and down the East Coast. And most recently, and what I'm most excited about now, I'm getting the opportunity to run something called the Obsidian Catalyst Fund, which provides capital to other diverse entrepreneurs that are building their entrepreneurial dream and passion.
So I guess I'll start with the first one, the first key to success. I think I have determined and discovered, at least for myself, that it's starting with your purpose. Like, what is your purpose in life? And starting with what purpose is and what you're passionate about and finding your passion so that you're operating in, I suppose, operating in your purpose. Like, many people are called to do what they are doing. How has, or how is, or have you tied your purpose to what it is that you do on a daily basis.
I've always been a person who likes to build community. And a real estate office was my real passion. Actually, it's a ministry, because I probably could make more money doing something else other than just running a brokerage. However, I call it a ministry because I saw a need. And usually when you open up a business, you fill in a need, and you're also working in your gift zone. And the need that I was feeling was that in my marketplace, we did not have a Black-owned brokerage, or we were not getting the proper support in our community that we required to have the best real estate professionals on the market. And so what I set out to do is to open up a brokerage where the people in our community could feel proud to walk into from an aesthetic perspective, from an educational perspective, from a professional perspective. That's what I did. And my purpose is community building. I had to wrap my brain around that and just understand that that's what I do. And I call it a ministry, as I said, because you got to have a thick skin, a tough stomach, and you got to really want to do this thing in order to engage with people at that level, because it's not for the faint at heart, and it doesn't always pay the most amount of money.
Now, I know you especially, Bo, because I've tried to bite off your purpose and your mission statement that you have quite a few times. But, you know, I always talk about Simon Sinek's book. He's got a book called Start With Why. Uh-huh. And it says people don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. And I know that all the things that you do, Bo, you have a why behind it. What's your purpose? What's your why behind all the things you do?
So I got two reflections on this, Julia. And it's taken me a hard time. I used to, you know, in a lot of the environments I was in, people would always say, like, you know, what's your big why? And I always, like, sort of was like, I struggled with that a little bit. Yet I knew there was something really fueling me. And I think the way I've recently come to think about that is that there were two sort of values that I held really dear to my heart that I think it's taken me a long time, even in my career, to realize were important to me. And those were this concept of contribution and a concept of justice. And where that showed up in my big whys, when I worked at a nonprofit early in my career, and the tagline or the sort of like little marketing slogan of the nonprofit was to let talent shine. And I think that if I were to think about what drives me as a person, it's this idea that there's talent, there's potential, and there's capacity in communities, in neighborhoods, in buildings, and in people that is not shining as brightly as it could. And this opportunity to figure out how to let that talent shine as bright as it possibly can is something that has really driven me and pushed me forward. And why I think it's important that you start with the huge why is I think of this, you know, you called it, was it purpose and passion is number mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. I think of it as number one because it's kind of like the fuel. If you don't have any gas in the car, you're going to go anywhere. And the depth of that purpose and passion, I think, is what actually provides the fuel that allows the entrepreneurial drive to continue through the inevitable ups and downs and failures and bumps and bruises that come along the way. And I think you'll find that the most successful entrepreneurs are fueled by something that they're connected to very deeply.
Yeah, and which leads into the second point, which is about having a clear vision and a clear mission, which are different. People use the terms interchangeably, but right. they really are different. A vision is something that I see it, I can actually accomplish it. You know, I have the vision to be the number one real estate brokerage in the state of Minnesota. That can actually happen. But a mission is something that is forever going on. You're always chasing that purpose, right? The purpose. And you have the reason I said I bit off of yours, Bo, because with your organization, there was a mission that I also felt was very similar to my mission. Can you share that with us, what the mission for your organization is?
Yeah, we started out early on, and this was, you know, when my organization consisted of 3.5 people in a little rented apartment above a barbecue spot. We sat down and we talked about it. We said, well, what is the heart of what we show up every day and do? And we came up with this mission to transform lives, careers, and communities through real estate. And it resonated with us then. I think it's resonated through the last couple of decades. And it's resonated so much so that lots of people have borrowed it, taken pieces of it, moved it on forward, which I guess is a sign that it connected with people. But that organizing piece, this idea that transformation is possible and that we have an opportunity to do that lives in people's lives, in their careers, and in the communities we serve, and that real estate's our vehicle. Real estate's the medium through which we get the opportunity to
do it. Sure. Yeah. How do you feel about a vision and a mission? Emmerich, do you have one?
Well, the vision is to make sure that the people around me and the people I come in contact to and the people that are in my orbit are operating at the highest level possible. And they understand that growth is unlimited for them. And at the end of the day, do they have a way of building wealth for themselves and their family? And I always say this thing, and I always ask people this question. Do you know who your great-grandfather was? And most people say, no, I don't. And I say, you don't know who your great-great-grandfather was because he didn't leave you a damn thing. Because if he had left you something, there'd be a picture on the wall and you would understand that what wealth is all about and what legacy is all about. When Bo dies, there's going to be a picture of Bo and his great-great-grandchildren are going to say, that was Grandpa Bo. Look at what he did. Right? Yeah. And the same thing, you know, and that's what you want to do. And that's what I want to convince people to focus on, leaving a legacy where when they die, they still live on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. In many of my talks, you all know I used my grandfather, who was an original Tuskegee Airman, and I have his picture because he left us a story of resilience. And I carry that vision forward that he had. But a lot of that purpose and the mission and the vision, it's so important, and it's best that I'm talking to you two because you two obviously are leaving a great legacy, not just for your children, but for the many people under your tutelage, if you will, that take your sound bites, take your mission statements, and they see your vision and they run forward with it. So what you're doing is very powerful in having a vision that we all can, in a mission that we can steal, Bo, thank you, that we can all take and run forward with together. But the third one, the third key in this is that sometimes it gets hard, right? And we do encounter challenges, and you have to have the right mindset for that. So I'd love if you would share with us, you know, kind of what you think about mindset. We know that 80% of success is mindset, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so how do you embrace or adopt a mindset of resilience?
One of the things that occurs to me is that today, we think so much that when someone says, you know, how do you have a successful mindset? We go to thinking about like the positive side of that. What are my affirmations? How do I have a big vision? How do I think about this? How do I see myself? All of which are important, and I don't want to diminish those. But I think ultimately what separates people is the mindset they have when they fail. And I think as human beings, we have a really hard time holding, you know, I always say these people have a really hard time holding diametrically opposed things. And as professionals, as business people, as human beings in relationships, we think that we're either doing great or we're doing horrible. And I call it, we've got to be both a work of art and a work in progress. And what happens is when we see ourselves as a work of art, we're excited, we're inspired, we hold ourselves in esteem. And then something inevitably happens. Maybe something in our control, maybe even out of our control a lot of times, and we fail. And we're down in the dirt. We're covered in mud. The grandchildren aren't talking good about us. The people in the audience aren't talking good about us. They're talking some smack about us. And the question is, what do we do then? How do we process that? And I think most accountable people have a tendency to first accept responsibility for that. When you accept responsibility for your outcomes, which is a critical, important part of success, you can internalize that. So I failed. Well, then therefore I am a failure, right? Which is where a lot of people go. So I think the natural first human instinct when you fail is to like internalize it for responsible people. This is what good people do. They internalize it. And if you stay there, you basically get depressed and you stop taking action because you're like, I stink. I failed. Mm-hmm. I stink. You know, I'm going through this right now. I'm 40-something years old. I've done a lot of stuff, and I could wake up today and say I'm a failure, right? Because of something that happened or because of one situation mm-hmm. I'm in. So that's like the first instinct. You stay there, you're going to get stuck in depression, and you're going to freeze. The next thing that a lot of people do is they externalize their failure, and they say, I failed because of him, because if only Emmerich had supported me better, I would have done better. If only the company I'm part of had given me a different training. If only it was a different person in political power, or if I had enough money. So we externalize and we blame. That's the other natural human reaction when we fail. That also leads you nowhere. That'll get you nowhere. You take no accountability, you take no learning. So how do we move in a moment of failure? How do we move to a learning posture? Because a learning posture does two things. It allows us to take responsibility without defining ourselves as a failure, and it avoids blame. So how do we take information that the world gives us in terms of setbacks and failure, and how do we process that in a way that we can quickly move forward without diminishing the work of art that we believe we are and the vision that we hold for ourselves? So I think the depth of that vision and the passion you have around that is the thing that gets you up when you've been knocked down. Because if you believe so strongly in that vision and mission and purpose that you have, there isn't an option. There isn't an option to stop and say, I'm a failure. And there's an option to blame somebody else and take no accountability. You own the outcome, even when it's not your outcome, and you try to learn from the situation to move forward.
That's a little deep. That when you said that, it just put something in my mind of what a, and somebody reminded me of this yesterday, actually, where I talk about, I always say the windshield. Look through the windshield, not the rearview mirror, because the past does not exist. It's just gone. It's nothing you can do about the past. You can't change it. All you can do is look through the windshield. And there's a reason why the windshield is 10 times bigger than the rearview mirror, because where you're going is so much bigger than where you've been. And your future is so bright, you can't even see it. And so in that space of just understanding that whatever happened to you in the past, it doesn't define you. It doesn't define you. The definition of you is how you get up and how you keep walking after you've been through your past. You know, and so when you're having that conversation, Bo, about that, yeah, it's your ability to get back up. It's just your ability to say, hey, you know, if you don't mind, it don't matter. You can't mind failing, because it doesn't matter that you failed. And it's not even failure. It's just another lesson. And it can be a very expensive lesson of things to come and things that you have to do and focus on in order to get to the next level, because there's always going to be something. Let's just be real. It's no matter what you think is great. There's always going to be something.
That's absolutely right. So the point of having the mindset that you understand and know that is really so you don't waste energy trying to control something you can't. A lot of times we want to control something that we can't. I think people with, I guess, who have a mindset of resilience, you just got to adapt and you pivot, you know, and you focus on what you could have did differently next time or how you can win next time. Because if you stay there, there's a word I recently learned, emotional regulation. And so that means that, like, you feel the emotion, right? Like, okay, yes, I feel I'm disappointed or I'm afraid. Like, fear, I see you. I recognize it. I see you. Or you're angry or whatever it is, but you don't sit in it. You feel the emotion. And instead of sitting there and being a victim of it, you decide, how do I move forward in that? Like, you just acknowledge that there was, okay, I'm disappointed. That didn't happen. How do I move forward and change? And that's a different kind of mindset than a lot of people have, because it's hard. But most people do want to just sit in it, like Bo was saying, and be depressed and wallow in their pain and all of the things. But understanding you can't waste energy on controlling things that you can't control.
And there's a really interesting, like, subtlety there, because there are things you can't control, right?
Right.
But all the studies of resilience show that people who actually believe that they could control to some extent through the behavior, however faintly, the stuff that they can't control, are more successful. So it's not obsessing over something outside of your control so you're stuck in paralysis. But it's also not saying ignoring all that. It's saying, hey, what's the piece that I can do, however faint, however small, that moves me forward in light of this thing that may be completely outside of my control? And I think, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of some of the writing of Viktor Frankl, right? And who was, you know, was in a concentration camp, right? And ended up having this, like, very, like, enlightened, positive view on life, and ask him, how does he survive this horrific experience in the concentration camp? And he talks about, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space between the stimulus and the response, lies our ability to choose the way that we respond. And in that choice, he says, lies our strength and our freedom. And so what happens to us, completely kind of irrelevant. How we choose to process our response to that matters. And so something can happen that's outside our control, completely outside. I mean, this guy was in a concentration camp. It was completely outside his control. Yet he chose to have a response that was different. It was a totally acceptable response to be like, these are crazy people coming after me, trying to annihilate my whole people, right? Yeah. But he chose a different mindset about that. And I think, and in so choosing, gave himself power in a situation where he was powerless. And I think that's really important, especially for, you know, many of the communities and people that we deal with, where there are large, significant outside societal and structural forces that you could rightly and very fairly say we're against you or we're not working. And if we let that become the narrative we accept, we give up some of our power. So there's a difference between acknowledging that which is outside you and that which we have to do, or else we'll go crazy, but also understanding what I control is the ability to how I respond to that.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
And that with that, Bo, you know, it's this thing that the things that I can control are the things I can guarantee. And the things I can't control, I just have to accept them as they are and move beyond that and take from that what I do. Or, you know, just the 90-10 rule. And I say it all the time, 90% of what happens to you in life is how you respond to it. The other 10% is the fact that it actually happened. We got to figure out how to navigate that. We got to figure out how to grow through that. We got to figure out how to press through that, because the outside influences or the external pressure of the things that happen around us will absolutely crush us if we don't have that different mindset. And part of it is emotional intelligence. There's a great book, Emotional Intelligence 2.0. Understanding emotional intelligence. And again, that's one of my conversations, is talking about emotional intelligence, because that just gives us the ability to self-regulate, to self-manage our emotions, to keep our emotions. What's that thing? Keep your emotions between the lines.
Between the lines,
yeah. Because when they go out, when you let those things go outside the line, the results are not predictable. They're just not. And it's things that you can't even control it. You can't control it. I can't control what you say, what you do. And in that space, the other thing, you know, a lot of times we get concerned about the outside of what people think about, what people think of us. And as they're saying, it's none of your business what people think of you. And I believe that. I believe also it's all of your business of how they think of you. And how they think of you is how you show up, how you present yourself, how you represent as a person, in spite of whatever they do, because what they do don't control how you act. You know, you control, you have to self-regulate. And so in that space, we got to, I believe that we just got to focus on how, the how part, not the what, the how. How am I responding? How am I acting? How am I going to do what I'm supposed to do in spite of everything of what they're doing?
Well, so that brings me to the fourth key, which is to embrace failure and to learn from it. Because a lot of entrepreneurs are afraid of making mistakes. But the truth, I think, is that the failures are actually what leads to the most valuable lessons. It's kind of like that saying, what's the saying, that a smooth sea never made a skilled sailor? You know, and so people are so worried about failing when generally, in my experience, because I have a lot of experience with this, I failed quite a lot. And in my experience, it normally leads to the next thing in your journey, you know, from that. So how do you embrace what people may perceive as a failure, or, you know, and how do you take that as a stepping point, like use it as a brick to keep building from? How do you do that? Because failure, man, everybody's afraid of it.
It's none of your business what people think of you. It's all of your business of how they think of you, because they're going to think what they want to think anyway. You can't control what they think. You can only control how they think.
So you're saying that people are afraid of failure because they're worried about what people will think of the failure?
Yeah, what other people assume. Just because you don't succeed at that level, that does not define who you are. It just means that you tried. The only people who've never succeeded anything is people who don't try to do anything or they don't make an attempt at it. And the people that are judging you, usually it doesn't matter.
I think this goes all the way back to your number one, right?
The Julia? Purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose, yeah.
Because we only fail at objective things. We fail to make a profit. We fail to meet a goal. We fail to have a project work. We fail to have a partnership work, right? If I have a timeless purpose to unlock, use my life in service of unlocking talent that exists in the world, I may fail in an instance, but I didn't fail overall. And so I think when we judge success by temporary gold stars, and all of us type A, highly driven people are going to judge our success by these external factors, which, as Emmerich said, are what other people say about us. Then when those things inevitably, if you try stuff, inevitably that stuff's going to go wrong. If you actually try to do anything exceptional, eventually the crowds aren't going to cheer for you. They're going to turn against you. Someone's going to be mad at you. Something's going to go wrong. And if that's your only measure of success,
right,
then you do anything you can to get back to that false place versus pursuing the core thing that's in you and that was in the core of what you were trying to do at the beginning.
Like people always say, yo, you're successful. No, I've had moments of success. Nobody's successful at everything that they do. Mm-hmm. There are moments of success. And they're working that space, Julia, like you were talking about the sea. You know, I've heard this thing where it says, you know, success teaches you nothing. Failure teaches you everything.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, that's where the real lessons are learned.
And I feel like to grow, you brought this up, this idea of growth and learning, right? Like, and even like physiologically, like we all believe in like, belief in our minds, if we work out, if we consistently work out, that we can grow strength, right? But what happens when you work out? If you lift weights, even as a weightlifter, you're going to lift, tearing down your muscle.
Right.
And oftentimes you're going to lift to failure. You're going to lift till you cannot lift anymore.
Right. Yes.
So effectively, you are going to break down to allow yourself to break through. And that physiological breakdown that we're very familiar with in like weightlifting or working out is not something we embrace in life. And ultimately, I think the people that are able to navigate the best, that achieve best things, that have the most impact, have had significant breakdowns in their lives. And it's in those breakdowns, it's in those low points that the foundation for the transformation gets laid.
That comes back to what they're saying, I don't look like what I've been through.
You okay?
You know, people always see that. People always say, oh, great, that's great. I want to be you. I want to do what you do. You don't want to do what I had to do. You don't want to go through what I've been through to get here. All you see is the bright, shiny part. You don't see the part where you dragged through the mud. Your name's been dragged through the mud. You've been drugged through the mud mentally, physically, spiritually. You've been at a place where your breaking point and you had to fight through that. But that's the part that people don't know. They don't understand. They don't see. And so at that space of just understanding what it takes to embrace failure, some will, some won't. So what? Someone's waiting, you know, and that's about a task. That's about people. It's just not always going to work the way that you designed it to work. And I've heard this thing before. The most successful people are great at plan B because plan A is going to fail somewhere, right?
Yeah.
It's plan B that really, really worked because plan A, you had to redirect yourself.
And I think that's the whole point. And that ties back to the mindset of resilience, because you fail forward. That's how you learn resilience, is because you have to at some point fail and you go to plan B in order for it. It's just, like I said, for me, all of my failures, what I thought were failures at the time, always just turned out to be the next opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it is. But it was because, number five, surrounding yourself with the right people, which I think is good. And by the way, these one through five are not really in any particular order, because you could argue that this is, I know Emmerich's dancing about it. If y'all can't see him on YouTube, he's dancing about it, because this is Emmerich. So in fact, let me tell you the two places in my keynote where I've referenced you. I say my mentor friend Emmerich Peace always says your network is your net worth. And then I go a little bit further down and I say, or as Emmerich likes to remind us, relationships take you places money can't. Because I know those are your two most quotable quotes that you, those are the two Emmerichisms that everybody knows about Emmerich. Is he's going to say those two things. But the reality is success in entrepreneurship isn't just what you know. In fact, it's less of what you know. It's certainly more about who you know.
Well, no, Julie, it's who knows you.
Okay, there we go. Yeah,
it's who knows you.
Tell me more, Emmerich.
Well, you know, it's a lot of people that you know, right? But they can't help you do what you're supposed to do. The magic happens with who knows you, because they're talking about you when you're not even in the room. It's that third party validation. I've been places, and no matter of fact, I called you last week and you were someplace and I was talking to somebody else. You had no clue I was talking to them. They had no clue that they were going to be talking to me about you. And I brought up your name and they said, oh, I'm going to be with her this evening. I said, oh, really?
Yeah, I was at the airport and Emmerich called me and I said, I'm on my way to New York. And he said, really? I just talked to a lady and it happened to be the same lady who was texting me at the very same moment. It's a circle of who you know. But she was calling Emmerich for a totally different reason, to invite him to come and speak to their organization, not knowing that I even knew Emmerich like that.
It's not who you know, it's who knows you. And so in that place, it's just a place of validation that said, hey, yeah, you talking to the right person when Julia comes to speak to you guys. That's a great connection.
Which, by the way, that event went very well, Emmerich. You'll be pleased to know.
Oh, I had some concern.
I was worried about failing forward, y'all, but it all turned out okay.
Yeah, but that whole idea of who you know, I believe that in that space, people have to have assigned roles in your life. Mm. And they have to be clear about what their role is for you. And you have to be clear that's the right person for that role in your life. And a lot of times we just don't have those people who we can pick up the phone and call and have that best conversation with.
If you are one of those people that don't have those people to call, because I think when we talk about wealth, for the first thing that goes for me is I think about social wealth. I don't think about money wealth, because I've been blessed to have a lot of people who I can call, you know, who believe in me or who can give me the correct advice or the right wisdom. I mean, I'm incredibly rich in my social wealth because I know people like that. But there's a lot of people who have not had access to people like that. So if you're one of those people, how do you seek out or find the right people to be around?
Change your environment. What they say, the best way you can help poor people is not to become one of them. And so if you're hanging out in that space, if you have your sum total of five people you hang around the most. Mm-hmm. And so if you're around four broke people, you're going to be number five.
Yeah.
So you got to change the circle of people who you engage with on a consistent basis.
You know, I think another piece that can help people in thinking about this is that to always think, you know, if you think about Emmerich's thought, people oftentimes they think about network and they think about, you know, building an organization or building a set of resources. We tend to think from our perspective or from our stripe on the ball. Let's say we're a real estate salesperson. We think about building a team and we say, well, I need to get a buyer agent and the buyer agent is going to help me not have to spend as much time with buyers, right? And so I need to get an EA so I don't have to do these tasks. I think one of the most important things that people can do to build great relationships is take off the hat of their perspective. So this is kind of embedded in Emmerich's. It's not about who you know, about who knows you. It's actually not about what people can do for you. It's about what you can do for other people.
Absolutely.
So start to look at it from the other side. Mm-hmm. So one of the best ways I see that happens all the time is people approach people who they think are more successful than them. And what they want is they want to be mentored. They want some help. They want this. They don't even know what they want. They just want, you're successful. Help me be successful. And what they never stop to do is understand that that person that they see is so amazing is both a work of art and a work in progress. And so they fail to think about where what they have to offer could be helpful to them. And I think the best way to build great networks and great, strong relationships and to have people in your life that may be far beyond you in their careers or are well below you in their careers is to think about what they need and how that relationship with you contributes to their life journey. And when you do that, you build relationships that are meaningful, mm-hmm. not just people who know of you. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people trying to be entrepreneurs today who think that they, you know, you go on, you get, our social media has totally perverted this. You go on, you get a certain number of likes, YouTube's going to pay you. Great. But like those who actually have enduring businesses, because the world they created does something for somebody else.
A lot of times, and I ask this question all the time of people, I say, how can I help you? Ask someone who you believe is on a different level, how can I help you? Nobody ever asks that person, Bo, how many times do people come to you and say, how can I help you, Bo?
And I need a lot of help,
what,
man.
What can
I need
I,
a lot of help. I'm a hot mess. I could use a lot of help.
But, and it's real. And it doesn't matter where you are in your life journey. You can always contribute something to somebody else because as much as you believe that they have everything.
I used to do this sometimes. I'd have new agents come to me and say like, hey, actually had this happen just the other day. This young man came to me. He runs a real estate club. He's a real estate club at Howard University. I want to meet with you. I said, great. So what I want you to do is I want you to go back before you come meet with me. Come think of all the questions and be clear on what you want to get out of this. But I also want you to learn enough about me and come up with one way you could help me. So here's a 19-year-old kid coming in to meet with me, asking for my time. I said, great, I'd love to help you. I want you to actually not see this as you're just coming here to sit at the feet of some grand poobah. You actually have something that you can offer to me. So I want you to actually think about that before you come in this meeting.
We got to do our homework. You got to do your homework and figure out, you know, what's going on with people. But in this day with ChatGPT, Perplexity, whatever, Claude, you can find out what people do. And if you just read what they do, somewhere you fit in that, you can be a cog in that wheel somewhere where there's a deficiency. Mm-hmm. And you got to figure that out before you have that meeting with that person and just let them know that, hey, I was looking at this about you. And here's a strong point, or here's my gift zone, and I want to offer that to you because I've read your bio, I've read your fit, and I believe that I can help you in this space.
And it transforms. What that does, that's not just about you helping the other person. It's about transforming the dynamic of that meeting. And I learned this from one of my mentors, a guy named Joe Horning, and he forced me when I was just a kid. I came in, I wanted to be part of these development deals. He would ask me to like fund my little 2 cents of the thing. And he treated me like I was a partner. And so when you come into a conversation on a human to human level of how can I help you and how can you help me, that conversation becomes a real human interaction and opens up the opportunity for that vulnerability and impact.
I love this conversation. And so I'm going to summarize the five. But what I'd also like to hear after that, because both of you also have a set of keys, if you will, I'd like to just briefly hear how they differ. So what we talked about in this particular scenario was the first thing, of course, is being find your purpose and your passion. What is your big why? Start with that and create a mission and a vision, very clear mission and vision around that, and then adopt a mindset of resilience. Or as I talk a lot about Kobe Bryant's Mamba mentality, you know, but also understanding that you will not always win. There are going to be many times that you actually fail. And so understanding how to embrace that failure and learn from it. And then the fifth one, which I find to be one of the most important ones, is surrounding yourself with the right people. Imrik, how does that differ from the conversation you're having about these? And Bo, likewise, your three keys, how does that differ from what you are out there teaching people?
It doesn't for me. It doesn't differ. I just break it down. I break it down into 10 elements. And actually, what started me on those elements was the One Thing book. Mm-hmm. The One Thing, like there are the 7 areas of the circle. And then I have 10 elements. It does not differ. And also my 12 steps to a $20 million business. You just broke it down in my first 2 sessions where I talk about your inside game and your outside game.
Bo, any differences
yes,
there?
Yes, I love it. You broke it down into 5. I had it, you know, a little shorter. People always ask me, what's the key to success? I say it's the 3 P's. And so for me, it's been the 3 P's. And those 3 P's, the first P is passion. that was in yours. You must have a compelling passion and purpose that connects very deeply to who you are and what innately drives and motivates you. Number two, second P, persistence. The only thing that's guaranteed is that you will fail. You will get knocked down. You will be beat down. You will feel like you are utter and complete useless. So you have to be able to get back up. And that's where you'll rely back on the first P. If you've got passion and purpose, you're going to get back up when you get knocked down. You're beaten and bloody and tattered. And then finally, it's people. Who you surround yourself with truly does matter.
Yeah.
And the people that you choose to be in business with, the people that you are able to be in business with, the relationships you build drive so much of it. So passion.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Persistence and people.
Well, friends, you heard it straight from two of the biggest and best entrepreneurs I know, the keys to entrepreneurial success. As always, we like to talk about the four pillars on this podcast. We talk about leadership, entrepreneurship, which we talked about today, wealth building and development. Tune in for next week's episode of another great conversation with your host, Bo Emmerich, myself. Maybe we'll even have Daniel, but we sure hope you'll be there next week. Check y'all out later. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.